This week on Pop of Culture, we go behind the scenes to get a look at a regional art exhibition.
We crack open a few books perfect for a dark and stormy night. I said dark and stormy night.
Thank you. And we get dressed up for a gala. You're invited. Coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Coming up this hour, our book club is back with a spooky edition.
And later, we'll preview an art exhibition showcasing works from artists in the Wabash Valley.
Hey, we're in the Wabash Valley.
But first, we're in the presence of royalty.
Muncie Civic Theater is gearing up for the Great Gatsby Gala. That's going to happen in October. And you know what? Sometimes things just work out. All the pieces and parts come together to form this kind of perfect relationship. Here to talk all about that is Kaylin Mellum, and she is Miss Indiana, but so much more than that. Thank you so much for joining us, Kaylin.
Of course. It's an honor to be here.
Kaylin, tell me about, first of all, kind of the Miss Indiana thing and how that relates to Muncie Civic Theater and then this big gala that they're planning.
Yes.
It all comes together. Trust me. Stay with us. It all works together.
It does. It all comes together. I grew up at Muncie Civic Theater. I started doing shows there when I was 16 years old. So I found my love for theater, and Muncie Civic is the perfect place to go if you are just figuring out what theater is, if you have a passion for performance. It taught me so much, and it taught me my love for the stage and for collaborating with one another, team building exercises, being comfortable to sing a solo. Mm-hmm. All of these skills led into pageantry, which I never really looked in the mirror and thought of myself as like a pageant girl.
Yeah.
And that's the fun thing is that you don't have to be a pageant girl to go far in the world of pageants. So I won the title of Miss Southern Heartland 1 year ago and then prepared for Miss Indiana 2024, which ultimately led me with the title. And I am now serving with my service initiative ACT, and it's all about using theater and performance to fundraise for any charity organization across the nation that's in need. And I will take that service initiative and the title of Miss Indiana with me to Miss America in December.
Oh my goodness, how exciting is that?
It's so exciting. We went dress shopping yesterday and I found some beautiful gowns. I'm very thankful for Miss Pris Gowns to help me find my gown. And with that service initiative that I'm taking to the next level, it's exactly what the Great Gatsby Gala is doing for our community.
And see, I told you, it all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I love the fact that Muncie Civic and the things that you learned there that you're using in every aspect of your life, you understand the importance of that, and now you want to use that to help others. Tell us a little bit more about ACT.
So ACT was founded in 2019 when I was in a play at Muncie Civic, and we asked the audience members to bring one can of food. And when every audience member brings one, we have hundreds. All of the food went to Blood and Fire Ministries here in Muncie.
Mm-hmm.
And how easy was that? I mean, it's a mutual benefit because the theater is working together and inviting the community into their space. And we are then giving back with not just entertainment and singing and dancing, but physical, like meeting the needs of what our community is looking for. So since then, I've kind of tried to just broaden it as much as I can and make it kind of just like an acts of service thing.
Yeah.
So anywhere that I go, I mean, I just did a classroom visit with some third graders and I sang to them and read them a book. I read Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss.
Nice.
It was really neat. And it's just a way to invite people into my heart and share my love of performance and community with everyone, no matter where I go.
That's wonderful.
Thank
so
you.
Tell us about some of the things that ACT has done already to help kind of in that fundraising arena.
I sang at Vera Mae's Bistro about a year ago to collect donations for Riley Children's Hospital.
Oh, nice.
I'm a former heart patient at Riley. I had heart surgery there when I was six. And it's a nationally recognized hospital that's native to Indiana.
Yeah.
And it literally touched my heart.
Yes.
And so any chance I get to perform and use my passion to collect donations for Riley and literally give back to them, that's something that ACT has done. We also put on a cabaret for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Muncie. So I have some very musically talented friends. I have some jazz performers that are friends of mine. And we put on a cabaret at Pruis Hall here on Ball State's campus.
Yeah.
And that was like a snack drive. All the snacks went to the Boys and Girls Club summer camp because they needed tons and tons of snacks to keep their kids well fed throughout the summer.
Wonderful. And now you're participating in this Great Gatsby soiree, if you will.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us a little bit about your participation in that event.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to get cast in the Great Gatsby, so I'm actually going to be in the play. We open on October 11th, and it runs for 2 weekends. And then that following weekend, after we close the show, is the civic soiree, a Great Gatsby gala, or gala, whatever you want to say.
Yes, whichever. Yeah.
Whichever. And it is a giant fundraiser that is enriching to the whole community. And all of the funds and donations collected through this gala is for the youth education program at Muncie Civic. Hundreds of kids come and audition for plays and musicals and learn all of the things that I explained that I learned when I was younger and which ultimately led me to be Miss Indiana today. All of these wonderful children come with ambition with some of them are go-getters and they're like I'm ready to be center stage. Some of them are a little shy and need this experience to help them break out of their shell. So everything that we're doing is for the arts and our youth in this community, and I'm so happy to be able to perform at this gala with along with some other very talented individuals. We're all going to come together and put on a beautiful show. It's going to be so much fun, and the community is welcome to be there.
Wonderful. And dress, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
And all of that. Yes, and the glad rags. That's right. That's right.
Yes.
So tell me about your character in The Great Gatsby.
I'm playing Jordan Baker. She is I'm assuming most people will know the plot of The Great Gatsby.
Yes.
And if you don't, here's your sign to go watch the movie, read the book, whatever you need to do. Jordan Baker is, she's like the only character in the story that really wears the pants and has this confidence. And really kind of she sees through all of the, I don't know, between the lines, you know, she's real fierce.
Yeah.
She's funny.
Yes.
It's been a lot of fun. And I cannot wait for everything to come together and put on that show for you all.
That's awesome. I can tell by the look on your face that you are having fun with this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that really you are a shining example of taking those things you can learn through art and theater and applying them to so many different areas of your life. I'm sure when you were getting involved in theater as a 16-year-old, you weren't thinking, hey, down the road, I'm going to use this to help people in our community and people in need.
Right.
What a lovely connection and what a lovely relationship you have made between the arts and community.
Oh, yes. It's a very unique blend and combination of skills that are orchestrated through the theater. And I don't think you realize it. Like you said, you have no idea what it's bringing to your soul, to your skill base, to your just everything that comes together through even one play. It teaches you a lot. And for me, I fall in love with the show every time I do it. And I carry that passion with me everywhere I go. So I'm very, very thankful.
I love that.
Thank you.
So why should people attend this Great Gatsby event in October?
For one thing, it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, there is talks of food and dancing and live music and a 1920s Gatsby theme. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun.
I mean, that is a great combo.
It's on October 26th, too, so it's kind of close to that Halloween mark. So, like, hey, this could be like a fun little thing for you to do before Halloween. It's a costume-based thing. I mean,
and if you get your outfit, you'll get to use it twice.
Mm-hmm.
So you could use it for the gala and then use it for your Halloween shindig.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect
so there's idea. There's the first reason.
Yep.
And in no particular order, but it's going to be fun. That's one of the reasons. It's going to make a difference in someone's life. I don't think a lot of people realize that when the theater even purchases the rights to the shows, that it's an investment. And it's just so the kids can learn the material and then put it on. And I mean, it's something that a kid that doesn't, you know, there could be a kid out there that may not feel like they belong in sports, mm-hmm. or they don't feel like they belong in the clubs at school, and they may not have a drama department. They may not have a lot of arts in the schools because that's being cut from the curriculum right now. Muncie Civic is a place where they can show up, make friends, have yes. fun. They're safe there. It's so important. And they invest in the kids. It's mm-hmm. just, it's, attending this gala is so much more than a night of fun and music, but you are truly making a difference by purchasing that ticket.
Absolutely. It's important to find your people, especially when you are young. And I know that Muncie Civic's youth education workshops and shows mm-hmm. are growing
oh, yes.
every year. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it takes support yeah. To make those things happen. So I'm sure they are extremely thankful for your support. I'm thankful that you took the time to come into the IPR studios and talk to us about everything going on. Best of luck
Thank
in
you.
The past. Pageant,
thank you so
in
much.
December? Right?
December 31st through January 5th. Wow. It's Miss America.
Well, best of luck. We look forward to hearing great things about you, about ACT, and everything you'll have going on in the future. Thank you so much, Kaylin.
Thank you.
Jen, do you like to be scared?
You know, I'm not the kind of person that enjoys it much. And I know that's hard to admit during this time of year, right?
Right, right. But there are a lot of people that yeah. love it, especially this month. Well, we're going to hear about a few books that will scare your socks right off. Hannah Elliott at the Jay County Public Library is joining us, and we are so glad because, A, it's her favorite month of the year, and B, she comes loaded with all sorts of recommendations for spooky season. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. How you doing?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. And I said from the jump that this is your favorite month. And why is that, Hannah?
Oh, Halloween.
Yeah.
I love Halloween. I love the fall. October is like the perfect fall month. So yeah. It's just a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. So what are the books that are going to be flying off the shelves, either as bats or broomsticks, this spooky season?
Yeah. So I brought with me today four recommendations and four books that I think are going to be really popular this month. The first one is called Horror Movie by Paul Tremblay. It just came out and I read it. And it's basically another book about the whole cursed film set that becomes haunted. Ooh. And there's all kinds of stuff that happens. And I read it and it was pretty good.
Yeah?
It was, yeah. I feel like it was a good good version of this type of genre, basically. It definitely had a mind-bending conclusion, in my opinion. So basically, like, they had filmed the movie and then only three movie scenes were released to the public because there's all this stuff that happened and cast member just died and all that. So they're trying to get them to reboot the film and only one cast member is still alive. So they're trying to talk him into doing it. It's that whole thing. But it was pretty good.
Oh, wow.
So that's one.
I didn't realize the cursed movie set was a whole kind of a genre or a whole theme.
Yeah, it is. There's been a few other books out this past year where they've done it, where you get to read like the movie script and things happen. And I just watched a movie yesterday called The Exorcism, and it's not The Exorcist because I was like, oh, what is this? But it has Russell Crowe in it, and it's that whole thing too. So we were like, oh, this is pretty good, you know? But I feel like it's definitely starting to emerge. It's not something that really is like been classic horror.
Yes.
So I feel like it's definitely something that's emerging though. But if you liked Cabin at the End of the World, you'll definitely like Horror Movie. So that is one that just came out and it's starting to get popular. Another one, this is a huge thing for Stephen King fans because Stephen King just released his new collection of 12 short stories called, the book is called You Like It Darker. And then he named it that because his fans were like, no, we want darker like stories and themes and all this. So he's like, okay, you want it darker? I got you, basically. And that's actually one of his quotes, like in the beginning of the book, which is kind of funny. But 12 new short stories, first time ever getting published. He focuses on the darker part of life, both metaphorically and literally. And one exciting story in this book, if you love Stephen King, is he actually did a sequel to Cujo. So the short story is called Rattlesnakes, and it's like a sequel to that. If you aren't familiar with Cujo, it's a rabid St. Bernard dog that's a killer. He gets bit by a bat. And
all those scenes are running through my head now. Oh, that movie.
And there is a movie of that too, so definitely check that out. But this is the sequel, and it's basically that a grieving widower travels to Florida and he's looking for a respite, but receives an unexpected inheritance with major strings attached. So I'm curious to see what he does with that. But if you're a Cujo fan, you finally get a sequel in the 12 short stories. So
I am absolutely checking that out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you're a Stephen King fan, get excited. I'm not going to go into all the stories because I don't want to spoil it, but there are a lot of cool stuff going on in there. The next one is one I am so, so excited to read myself. I haven't done it yet. It's on my to-be-read list for October. It's called Incidents Around the House. It's the new Josh Malerman book, who he wrote Bird Box. So if you're familiar with that. This actually released in June, but it's just now starting to pick up speed because of October. But basically, it's, you know, the whole thing about a haunting told from the perspective of a young girl whose troubled family is targeted by an entity she calls Other Mommy. So if you love the creepy, you know, kid haunting, all that vibe, there is another mommy. So it follows 8-year-old Bella. She has her mom, her dad, and Grandma Ruth. But then there is this other mommy who is a malevolent entity who asks her every day, can I go inside your heart? So that line definitely intrigued me. It's definitely going to be creepy. I feel like Josh definitely writes creepy well. So
that just gave me chills. I just got chills.
I'm so sorry. No, I'm not really, but
I know you're not. I know you're like, yes.
Yes, I know. So that one, definitely check that one out if you're into that. And I definitely will be. So maybe later I can follow up and let you know how that is.
Yes, please.
And then the last one that is really popular, Rachel Harrison, who wrote Such Sharp Teeth last year that went really popular, is back and just released So Thirsty. It's exactly what it sounds like. It is a vampire novel. Basically, this one is a woman and her husband sends her off on a trip with her best friend. And, you know, there's some trouble in the marriage. So he's like, just go away with your friend, have some time off and whatever. So the best friend tries to get the main character to live a little and like stop stressing.
Yeah.
They find she sets up like an encounter with a strange group of people is what they're saying is in this book. And basically the premise is they turn into vampires and it's life changing and there's consequences. So
wow.
I'm also curious to check this one out because I love a good vampire novel. So we'll see. But yeah, that's the four that I think people are really going to be talking about this October. And I personally am excited to get into some of these. So,
you know, I love that, Hannah, because I always feel like you bring such a variety. I mean, that was a lot of different types of spooky stuff. Surely if you are into that kind of stuff, as you know, you should be this season, right? Then you will absolutely find something that will give you chills like I just got like three times during this conversation. So I know there's a couple books I'm going to be picking up, especially I absolutely want to read the Cujo follow-up, the short story that Stephen King just put out. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us with another amazing list of recommendations. And if you want to get a hold of those, you better put them on reserve now at your local library or go pick them up because they're probably going to be very popular. Thank you so much, Hannah. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. Thank you.
The state of Indiana is making efforts to assist people with disabilities in their enjoyment of state parks and other outdoor areas. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel tells us what's available.
Indianapolis resident Nancy Griffin maneuvers around tree roots on a trail at Eagle Creek Park using a motorized wheelchair.
So this is Peggy.
Right.
Short for Pegasus because she flies.
With Peggy's help, Griffin can get to places and overcome obstacles she might not have been able to before.
I've been able to walk for over a dozen years, so being able to get out and walk through the woods is just the most wonderful gift.
Though Griffin has her own chair for trails, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources loans out motorized chairs at 11 state parks. This year, the agency released a webpage where people with disabilities can find things like trail chairs, as well as accessible places to hike, fish, hunt, or get in the water. The number of adults in the U.S. that have some type of disability has been slowly increasing over time. Rick Edwards is the director of Americans with Disabilities Act compliance for the DNR. Edwards says people with disabilities are living longer, and they want to be able to enjoy nature the way everyone else does.
People with disabilities are coming back from Iraq and Iran, military situations where, you know, they want to go out and experience the same things they experienced before.
Though the DNR has done a lot to make its properties physically accessible, Edwards says there's still more to do. He says he'd like to see more tactile exhibits, like the one at Falls of the Ohio State Park, which allows someone who's blind or has limited vision to feel models of the fossils under the water. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
IPR is an Indiana Public Broadcasting station. The Swope Art Museum is in Terre Haute, Indiana. Every year, they ask artists from six states, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee, to submit their best work for display in the Wabash Valley Exhibition. This is the 80th year for the exhibition, and our producer, Luke Jones, spoke to museum curator Amy MacLennan.
So I don't want to start off with a cliche, but I'm going to anyways. Can you paint a picture of what it would be? What does the Swope Art Museum look like when you walk up to it? What would you see when you walk inside? What's it like to go to the Swope Art Museum?
Oh, the Swope Art Museum is transformative. First, you walk up to this beautiful Italianate building. You walk inside the lobby through our double brass doors, and you see this glorious Art Deco statue by Paul Manship of Diana, the huntress. You're greeted there by our gallery guards there at the desk, and the downstairs is primarily works by the Hoosier Impressionists and related artists. One of the most popular paintings in the whole museum is on display in the first floor gallery. We call it 5 o'clock Tea by Mary Fairchild McMonies. And it's really magnificent painting, and it just transports you to this lovely porch and dappled sunshine and just a wonderful visit.
Be a nice thing to walk inside to as the weather changes there.
Absolutely. We are temperature controlled. So it's hot or cold or wet or freezing, or even if it's wonderful outside, just come in and enjoy the scenery.
And talk to me a little bit more about the history of the art museum, because I believe the proper title of the museum is the Sheldon Swope Art Museum, and he was like a jeweler in the 1800s, is that right?
He was. He was also a Civil War veteran. He was a very successful jeweler in Terre Haute. And he was really appreciative of art. And he believed that the residents of this area should always have access to the best art, right? To be able to experience wonderful art just the same as any other population in another big city on the East Coast or the West Coast or Chicago. So he really made it his mission, and he wrote in his will when he died that the funds from his estate would be used to establish the Swope Art Museum. Sheldon Swope so believed in this mission that he wanted to make sure that the museum would always be free to the public. So we do not charge admission.
Yeah, and if I think I read that he put in his will, he said that it had to be free, right?
It has, yes, it always has to be free. We cannot charge admission. He was also really forward-thinking in the organization of the governance of the museum. He also stipulated that the museum should be governed by a board of managers that would be three people, and mm-hmm. they would be appointed for life, they would be unpaid, and that one of those three had to be a woman.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, I thought.
Yeah, especially back in the early 1900s, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he died in 1929, so. Yeah.
Wow, that's very forward-thinking. Yeah. Yes. Okay, let's jump into the present and talk about this exhibition, the annual Wabash Valley Exhibition. I believe this is the 80th year, right?
It is, and that's really amazing. We opened in 1942, and we've been putting on this juried exhibition for 80 years.
Wow.
It's changed a lot over the time, but and we have it going on now. We're just installing the exhibition. This year's exhibition runs from October 18th, that's a Friday, mm-hmm. and it will stay open through December 15th. And October 18th, we have, you know, we throw a party for that. Everybody's invited. We don't turn anyone away. And we have, it's a chance to meet the artist. It's a chance to meet the juror and, you know, of course, other staff. And also just to see the great, great, wonderful art. The exhibition is open to artists living in six states, and that includes Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. And so it's really kind of a very nice way of just seeing what great art is all around us right here in the Midwest.
Yeah, and that was one of my questions is, what is there a theme? Like, what kind of art? I mean, that's a wide swath of artists here in the Midwest. What kind of works are they bringing? What does it look like?
Oh, you know, and that's the best thing, because there's just everything. There's everything in there. You know, we don't tell the artists what to make. We don't even give them a theme. It's just give artists, this show gives artists an opportunity to take what they consider to be their best work, whatever that may be, and to put it in front of an independent juror and have that person select a grouping to be exhibited all together.
Yeah, so talk to me a little more about what a juried art show is. I was actually having a conversation with one of my coworkers before this interview, and she was like, I'm not even sure what that means. So can you describe what a juried art show is and how that process works?
So a juried art show is a competition, just like maybe a foot race or writing an essay to try to get published, right?
Yeah.
So it's a way to put your work out in front of people. It's a way to sort of, you know, have it judged by someone who's experienced at looking at a lot of art and thinking about art. It's a way to show your work in the context of all these other artists who, you know, are living in this Midwestern region. And of course, everybody who's a creative person who's making something or writing something or dancing something, you know, they want to have their work seen and experienced. And so we provide a really beautiful venue for that. And this is, you know, I didn't mention earlier because you wanted to know what people saw, what their experience would be when they first set foot in the Swope, that we have a whole second floor with more permanent collection galleries and visiting exhibitions and this Wabash Valley juried exhibition as well.
Okay. Have you seen the exhibition yet? I mean, I know you said you were, I think, putting it up, right? Staging it?
Yeah. It's being put up. It's not quite done because there's a lot to do. There are You know, we had 68 artists be accepted. Wow. That is, 68 artists were accepted. Many more applied, you know, but 68 were accepted. We had 72 works accepted. Wow. So that's a lot of very different things to figure out how they should relate to one another in the galleries.
And that's your job as curator, right?
Well, I'm very lucky to have excellent staff, and we've got, because I have other duties too.
Sure.
So the first, you know, the first line there is the juror, who this year is Clifford Tresner, and he's actually a Terre Haute native, and he got his undergraduate degree from ISU and then went on. He's jurying online using an online entry system that most places use now. And then he selects the pieces and we tell the artists, and they have their work delivered here or they bring it themselves. We unpack it and make sure that that it's not broken or whatever. Yeah. And then it's the fun part actually of just figuring out where to put things, what looks good next to the other. And like I said, I have wonderful staff and they've done a wonderful job. I did walk through, in answer to your question, I walked through today and it's going to be really fun. There's just so much talent in this area, so much.
Yeah. Is there, I know you're still staging it, but is there a piece that you've kind of already fallen in love with or something that you're really excited for visitors to see?
Oh, you know, we've had some really, I can't play favorites, you know, because there's still, the awards have to be juried and Clifford will be here in person to jury those awards. And I have to remain kind of at arm's length when, like, the Purchase Award people come in and they select their pieces. I try not to influence anybody, but just suffice to say that every year it's just more stunning than the last. And I'm always really, really impressed by the quality of the work, by the intentions of the artists, you know, what they're communicating, how timely the work is, and how beautiful it all looks together.
And it's just artists from Indiana and the five surrounding states, give or take, right?
That's right. And what is really interesting, I think, about that is, you know, we do get artists from all those states, and but we still also have artists included who are actually living here in Vigo County. Wow. So that is, I think, a very good testament to just how many really talented artists are living in this area.
Wonderful. Let's talk logistics. How do people get to this exhibition? When can they see it? Can they bring snacks? Tell me what we need to know about visiting.
Okay. Well, when you come to the reception and the awards ceremony on October 18th from between 5 and 8 p.m., we will have a lovely spread of light refreshments there. Please don't bring in any outside food. and we're located in Terre Haute on 7th Street. There's parking right across the street that evening. And just come as you are. There's no dress code. We aren't snooty here. We just love to have people come in, and I personally love to see people look at the art, enjoy the work, respond to it. That just makes me so happy. And if you haven't been, you must come and see it. Everything in it is a work of art, and you can see it all here up close. You know, we're not going to make you stand behind a wall of glass.
Yeah, that's my favorite way to interact with art at a museum, is to get as close as possible without touching it so you can really see the work.
Well, sometimes, you know, I won't tell. Or don't tell on me, but I have actually done that.
Well, you are the curator. I think you get some leeway there.
I do, yeah.
All right. Amy McLennan is the curator at the Swope Art Museum in Terre Haute, Indiana. Thank you so much for being with us, Amy.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
I'm Luke Jones.
I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey.
This week, for What Are You Working On?, our co-host Kara Duquette talks to a young writer and comedian finding their voice.
We're here today with James Brubeck. He is a storyteller from Indiana. Whether it's writing, acting, or directing, or even being in the audience cheering, he's eager to be a part of storytelling. He has dreamed of making others laugh since he was 8 years old. Thank you for being here with us today, James.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, we're going to ask our famous question, Weiwo, what are you working on?
Oh, man, what am I working on? A lot.
Do tell.
So there's the school projects, which are like, oh, production, you're writing for this production. Oh, you're helping with this documentary. Oh, you're doing your job as a GA and filming things that go on at the college. But in my personal life, I have been working on a production studio. When I first came to Ball State in my sophomore year, I had a professor ask me why I was here. And I looked him in the eyes and I said, I have stuff I want to make. And if no one else is going to do it, then I will. And the more I went through my schooling, the more I realized I didn't want to sacrifice my stories and the important messages that I could provide. And I realized that in order to get my stories out there in the way that I feel their integrity is there, I needed to make a company that could be the name that these stories stand under. So a production studio would be sort of the tools needed to make the stories. A producer is someone who hires the people, they fund the projects, they provide the equipment. They are the money pockets, if you will. They give you the money you need, except for I don't have money, so I've got to find a way to make money to produce these things. So I'm currently working on a sketch comedy show for that. I've always dreamed of doing something like that.
Excellent. So the work you're doing in school is feeding this sketch comedy project you're working on, would you say?
A little bit. It's keeping me working, because part of the problem with writing especially is like you hit a block where you're like, there's not much else I can do with this right now. And you either have to give in to quote unquote defeat and work on something else, or you just sit and stew and get nowhere because you're sitting and stewing. And it's kind of helped me a lot with, I'm still working on things. I'm working on things I'm proud of and getting experience and getting my name on things. And it's helped me to not only focus on one creative project.
Oh, I completely understand that. I don't look at leaving one project when you get stuck or blocked to another one as defeat. There's kind of a synergy sometimes, yeah. I think, when you're working on multiple things.
The only defeat that I feel about that sometimes is like when I'm on that roll on something and I'm like, I want to work on this. And I'm like, buddy, you're out of block. You just got to put it down for a second. And then I'm stubborn and I'm like, no, I don't want to.
I want to figure it out now.
Yeah, I want the answer. Give it to me.
I get that. So who are some of your comedy mentors or people you find funny?
Oh, man.
I'm just curious.
I grew up watching SNL with my mom, and I think that's where it started. It was Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader seasons. Amy Poehler, of course, was there. And from there, I got into Smosh on YouTube. I was like 8 or 9 years old. And early YouTube sketch comedy was really pushed on there. It got a lot of views, and it did really well. Smosh was a YouTube channel, is a YouTube channel. They're still going. Of two guys who just made sketch comedy, and it was based around their friendship, and I saw them doing it. And that was kind of when I was like, oh my gosh, I can do this. My dream was being a YouTuber for a long time.
So where are you imagining that you will take your sketch comedy? How will that be put out to the public?
In the past, and I'm sure I'll continue to do it every now and again, I post on my own YouTube channel some sketch comedy, stuff I've made for classes, because of course when I'm doing class videos, I'm making little sketches. But I think it is kind of like the growing, the plant nursery, I guess, for my art, because a lot of my art starts there. And then sometimes I get one thing where I'm like, I can see this going further. Because doing sketch, like I did it for years as a kid and then I just stopped. And it was when I came back to school at Ball State that I started doing it again. And it's funny how that works, because then it started opening other doors of like, oh, wow, I have serious stories I want to write too. And I think that it is the door to open to the house of my work. I think comedy is who I am at my heart. Laughter is something very important to me. But I think to share heartfelt moments, I can't do it with people unless I can laugh with you.
I couldn't agree more with that, because like even when you're thinking about exploring comedy, I mean, that can open to very serious topics.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And even in the serious things I've been writing, I'm like, there's a little bit of comedy here. I got to work that out. And it was David Arquette, who I met in a class setting, where I was like, hey, I'm doing a piece about grief and like what it's like to lose your mother. And I realized, like, is it okay to put something funny in there? And he was like, absolutely. That's what makes it so relatable.
Yeah. You know, laughing instead of crying, or doing both, or, right. You know, nothing's like concretely just one emotion.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
So
I think some of the best cries I've had is when I start out just upset, and then like, I'll just go on this rant and be like, and I'm sad and I've had the worst day and now I'm just laying here crying. And then I start laughing because I'm like, what are you even crying about even more? you're laying in bed, you're crying. Yes. What else now? You've let it out.
Yeah. Where did this come from? Where's it going?
Right.
Now, is there anything else you'd like to talk to us about, you know, sketch comedy, your art, things you're working on?
I've been getting into stand-up.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting aspiration. I find that terrifying, the idea of stand-up.
I have done it once, and I plan to go out and do it again. I really just had to figure out, like, how do I write this now? Because this is a different genre of comedy. How do I write this? How do I want to present myself? And figuring out how to write that, and then figuring out a brand, because I talked to a teacher about it, and she was like, you have to figure out how to make yourself memorable. Like, what is your gimmick? What is your brand?
Well, is there any place that we can find you online and see some of your work?
Yes. I have an Instagram, james.brubeck, B-R-U-B-E-C-K. And then on there, all my fun little links are there. So my YouTube channel's there. And eventually when I do get the production company out, it will be promoed there, and all my fun little reels that I make and life.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. It was a delight talking to you today.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, Jen, we've got a lot to cover in our arts calendar this week. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. The Hard Day's Night Beatles Tribute will take the stage at the new Gas City Performing Arts Center Friday, October 11th. Hailing from the rock and roll city of Cleveland, Hard Day's Night has been entertaining American crowds since 1996, with four different show routines covering all eras of the Beatles, including stitch-for-stitch replications of the costumes.
Nice.
The band strives to recreate the original feel of the Beatles. The show begins at 7:30 p.m., and more info can be found at gascitypa.com.
AC.com.
Do you have a favorite era?
Ooh, it's so hard. Musically, I love it all.
So, costume-wise,
it's got to be Sergeant Pepper's.
I'm telling you.
It has to be, right?
Yep, stitch for stitch.
Yep.
I'll hold them to that. All right, the Charles W. Brown Planetarium at Ball State University is presenting Halloween Celestial Origins this month. During this program, you'll learn the history of Halloween and how it fits into the seasons as a, quote, cross-quarter day, unquote. You'll also explore the night sky and learn what planets, constellations, and stars will be out on your Halloween evening. Shows are offered Fridays and Saturdays. bsu.edu/planetarium is the place to go for more info.
Oh, that sounds fun. I love the shows over there.
They're wonderful.
Such a beautiful, beautiful planetarium.
They're great.
The 13th annual showcase concert on Friday, October 11th, will offer a sampling of the School of Music's outstanding large ensembles, chamber groups, and soloists. The 7:30 p.m. concert will be in Sursa Performance Hall at Ball State.
The Great Gatsby opens on Muncie Civic Theater's main stage this weekend. Step back in time to the glitz and glamour of the Roaring Twenties at one of Jay Gatsby's infamous parties. Based on F. Scott Fitzgerald's legendary novel, this play tells the tale of eccentric and mysterious millionaire Jay Gatsby in his tragic pursuit of Daisy Buchanan, the woman he's loved since his youth. Come see this novel that we've probably all read. Tickets at MuncieCivic.org.
Ooh, that's going to be a good one. That's a good one.
Yep.
The Hillcroft Services Shop and Share Vendor Market is Saturday, October 12th at Hillcroft in Muncie. This event is an opportunity for Hillcroft to showcase the talents of their clients. Check it out from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And this is the right month for the historic Beech Grove Cemetery Tour, Saturday, October 12th, from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. Have you ever been there?
Yes, I have.
It's amazing.
I love this event.
It's so awesome. Learn more about Muncie's rich and fascinating history by taking a guided tour through a portion of historic Beech Grove Cemetery. Actors will be positioned along the route to bring these historic figures back to life. Tours are about 1 mile and generally leave on the half hour.
Ooh. If you have an event Pop of Culture listeners need to know about, tell us at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who's definitely had a hard day's night, and was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Jen Blackmer. Special thanks this week to Stephanie Weekman. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.